Welcome back to the Running Wine Mom podcast. I'm your host, Samantha Slinsky, aka the Running Wine Mom. And today we have a special treat for all the book lovers out there. Joining us is Heather Gudenkauf, a New York Times and USA Today bestselling author known for her gripping thrillers that keep readers on the edge of their seats. Heather's latest release, Everyone is Watching, is set to hit the shelves in March 2024, promising a twisty, locked room thriller that explores the dark secrets and high stakes gamemanship among contestants vying for a $10 million prize on a reality show. But before we delve into her latest work, let's take a journey through Heather's literary journey, from her childhood spent immersed in books to her prolific career as a writer. Heather has captivated readers with her intricate plots, compelling characters, and keen insights into the human psyche. In today's episode, we'll not only explore the themes and inspiration behind Heather's novels, including This Is How I Lied and The Overnight Guest, which I just finished This Is How I Lied like yesterday during my travel. I was reading it, which was very exciting, but also gain valuable insights into her writing process, research techniques, and the challenges and triumphs she has gone through. So grab your favorite beverage, cozy up to your favorite reading nook, and join us as we unravel the mysteries of Heather Gudenkauf. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, I'm very excited. As I said, I fell in love with The Overnight Guest when I read it. Like, I think I got through it in maybe 2 or 3 days max. It was just so gripping, and the way it all kind of came together was amazing. And then This Is How I Lied, I couldn't stop. I couldn't put that down. We just got back from a trip, and during my packing, during my travel, it was like, I couldn't put it down. I listened to that one.
Thank you.
So to start each episode, we have our wine in one of the week segment. This is where we share our favorite bottle of wine or drink, then about something that has been bothering us, and celebrate our recent victories. So grab a glass, take a deep breath, and let's get started. So Heather, what is your wine of the week?
Okay, so I don't drink a lot of wine. Usually when we go out to dinner, I'll have some. But I was asked to come up with a wine cocktail kind of thing for another show that I'm going to be talking about my new book, Everyone is Watching On. And so I was trying to think of something creative and fun surrounding wine, because the story takes place in Napa Valley. And so I found something called a frosé, which is a frozen wine drink that, so you blush wine with honey, strawberries, you mix it all together, freeze it for 6 hours, and then voila, you've got this beautiful frozen wine drink. So I'm excited to try it. Sounds delicious.
It sounds so delicious. It's always good. I've had like frozen rosé slushies before in the summertime. So everything that you're saying, I'm like, it's cold. It's freezing here. It's like 25 degrees outside. Yeah. So I'm like, I could use a nice frozen, you know, wine drink.
Yeah.
So what is your wine of the week?
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's a tough one. It's been a good week. I guess, and it's not really a wine. It's more, I know it's going to come to an end. So I'm in Iowa. So I'm in the Midwest, and it's just been absolutely beautiful this week. But I know because it's fall spring, we're going to get like a 20 inch blizzard, and you know, it's just teasing us that spring is coming. So I guess I'm kind of being a doom and gloom, knowing that's going to be around the corner, but it always is in the Midwest. We get fooled a little bit with this nice weather, and then bam, we get hit.
Yeah, it's like first spring, then winter, second spring, winter, third spring. I totally feel that. Like I said, I am so ready for the warm weather. I'm over winter by this time. And what is your win of the week?
My win of the week. Okay, so I have been on a new health kind of journey and just trying to get stronger. And I've made a commitment to myself to start lifting weights. And I know that sounds super impressive, but they're very light weights. And I have, I'm on a streak of 30 days, 1 month of doing something active every day. And, you know, as a writer, you sit a lot. And so I have to make a really concerted effort to get up and moving. And I just feel so much better for it. And more energy. I think I'm more creative. And so it's just all around a good thing.
That's amazing. That's something really good to be proud of. And it doesn't matter how big or small the weights are. If you're lifting them, it's so important to just incorporate into your everyday life. So that's awesome. And 30 days is great. I think so. It's like 20, it takes 21 days to start a habit. So you've officially surpassed that.
It's just automatic where I get up and I go do what I do, and it does. It feels good.
That's awesome. So I always like to ask my guests, what is one struggle you've overcome leading to where you are now? And what is one thing that you are most proud of in your life?
Oh, goodness. So struggle. Okay. So I, being a writer and loving reading so much, you'd think that I had a pretty smooth journey to becoming a reader, and I didn't. Reading was really, really hard for me. School was really hard for me starting out, and it was discovered not until the middle of my first grade year that I had a profound unilateral hearing loss, which simply means that I can't hear at all out of my left ear. But with this type of hearing loss, classrooms can be a real challenge because they're noisy and a lot going on. So I really fell behind my classmates, and school was really hard, for me. And my speech wasn't great. I didn't know what was going on. So I missed a lot. So it wasn't really until the hearing loss was discovered and I got hearing aids and some accommodations were made that things started to build and take off for me. And really my love for reading eventually bloomed from that.
That's amazing. Yeah. And that I'm sure. And as I am a high school level teaching, but mm-hmm. I can only imagine being so young and not being able to grasp all the things that are being told, reading is such a huge part of the younger years of people reading to you or you learning to read. And so that is definitely something to be, again, so proud of, to overcome that hump and after, finding everything out to be a writer. In the long run, it's actually very, gives a lot of hope for people, I think, who maybe think in their younger years that they didn't get everything that it's such like a struggle, I feel like, as a parent, where you're like, my child needs to be doing all of these things by this age. And if they're not, it's okay because they can still become.
You find your path, and it doesn't look the same as everybody else's. And everyone's journey is so different. And we need that time to discover ourselves and figure things out. And the patience to be able to do that too.
And just a side fact, my dad has unilateral hearing loss as well, but he didn't, it didn't happen. He got like a cold one time, and then like he was maybe in his 30s. And my grandfather, the same thing happened. It was both in their left ear, and they lost the hear. So it's kind of like a big joke in our family with my dad. Like if he doesn't want to hear something, he just like turns his left ear. He's like, yeah, keep
very
talking.
Convenient.
Keep
talking. I've been accused of that myself.
So,
hear something, it just, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, or then like when people don't know and he sits down. One time I remember he went out to like have drinks or something, and someone must have been talking in his left ear, and he just didn't hear them, wasn't paying. And like the next day, they said to my mom, like, is Rob like mad at me? I was trying to talk to him yesterday. And she's like, oh, were you in his left ear? He can't hear anything out of that.
That's right. Yes. And you have no idea what's going on that side of your body. And I know for me, when I was younger, I was riding my bike and I didn't hear a car coming, and I got hit by the car. I was so lucky. I was so lucky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fortunate to be okay, but just don't it doesn't exist if it's happening on that side of the room.
So to kind of maybe take a step backward but go forward, the Running Wine Mom, we always start off with a little fitness. So you kind of talked about you are on a new fitness journey, so is there any other way that you love to stay active, or right now you're just focusing on that?
Yeah, no, I, I've always been a hiker, a walker. So that's always been a part of my day and my life. And But one thing I'm really proud of that I added in the last couple of years is swimming. I never learned how to swim as a young person, and my husband loves to swim and is always doing it. And for years he's been saying, you know, you should really swim. It's great on your joints, and I think you'll really like it. And I never liked to get my ears wet because of my hearing issues. I didn't like it. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get all the gear. So I got the cap, I got the earplugs, the nose plugs, everything. And I learned how to swim. And so I a couple times a week I go and I just swim, and it's really one of my favorite things to do. It's so almost meditative because there's no outside. I hear runners say that too, when there's like no outside, the world's not coming in. It's just you and, you know, swimming. And I love it. It's just, it's really probably my favorite thing to do.
Yeah. And it's very like just something that you kind of compete with yourself in. I feel as though swimming and running so similarly, where it's like, nobody, it's not like being on a team where you have to kind of pass the ball to someone or do it's it's like you just do the amount of laps that you want to do and just zone out and enjoy it, which is great.
Absolutely.
So how do you stay motivated to maintain your own fitness routine?
Well, it's hard. I think I'm like probably like a lot of people. I go in fits and starts, and you know, things go great for a while, and then some kind of roadblock, whether it be work or something with family or health, you know, and it's like, then you just kind of hit a wall. But the great thing about it is, you know, you can always pick back up. And so if I do end up taking a break, you know, I'm really learning to listen to my body, and that, you know, some days I need to rest, and some days I need to take it easy or try something different. But what I always come back to is, and sometimes we forget this when we get away from our daily activity, is how good it makes you feel. It's hard to get started, but once you get started, the benefits just are fabulous. And just how you feel, just your outlook, everything just seems to get better.
Yes, I can totally relate to that as well. So what struggles do you have to keep your routine in check?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, as a younger person, when I was working as an educator, it was time, like making time, and then having a family, having kids. And, you know, as moms, I think we put ourselves last a lot. So as a younger person, that was probably my biggest challenge. And now that I'm, you know, I've stepped away from education, I'm writing full time, my kids are grown, I'm the problem. I'm the barrier, because I do have the time. I do have the time. And it's just doing it, right? And so, like you said, making it a habit, making it a priority is key.
Awesome.
I'm the challenge.
I feel like so many people have, you know, it's the challenge of themselves, and that's just the hump that you have to get over. So can you tell us a little bit about your family?
Yeah, so I'm married. I've been married to my husband. We'll be married 30 years next fall, which is
congrats.
Exciting. And we have three grown children. A son who's in finance, he lives in London, a daughter who is in social work, and a daughter who is a civil engineer. And so all very different, wonderful kids. You know, family is very important to me. I'm very close to my siblings, to my mom. My dad passed away, sadly, last year. And just having that time with family is just so important to me. And I also have a very spoiled, adorable German short hair pointer, who is my constant sidekick.
And you were one of six kids, right?
One of six.
And the youngest. How was that growing up with so many siblings?
It was great. It was great. I don't know if they would think that necessarily, but I loved it. I loved being the tag along. You know, they took me places. Always were looking out for me. I thought it was fabulous.
I do always like to ask my guests, what do you think that your parenting style was raising your kids?
Oh, goodness. Okay. So my parenting style, I think I'm very hands-on, in the sense that I love spending time with my kids. We, read together because reading was so important to me. So that was a huge a part of their growing up, spending time together and doing art projects and, trying to really spend that quality time with one another. I like to think I'm a patient person. I think, as an educator, you have to be, and
Yeah.
I'm a former teacher, and I was elementary level. And
Gosh.
so I really, really try to get into the mindset of my kids and what they're thinking and feeling. And really my goal, and I hope I did a good job with it, is really to empower them to make decisions, good decisions for themselves. That's what I
Yeah.
hope. I don't know if they would say the same thing, but I would hope so.
Well, it seems like they're very successful, and that's the whole point of parenthood is to get
Right.
them
You
to.
just want them to be happy. Yeah, happy and
Yeah.
healthy.
And then I always also like to ask, what advice would you give to other parents?
Oh gosh. Be present. There's so many distractions in the world. And I know I'm sure I was guilty of it as a parent too, but even, being in education for so long, the kids who are just really wanting their parents present and available to them. It's so important. Be there, be present.
Yeah, and that is all they need is someone to just be in their corner and just love them. And that's great advice.
Right, unconditional.
So let's get into your world of writing and reading and all of that. So you talked a little bit about how growing up, you used books kind of as like a retreat and you found solace in reading. How did this early love for books kind of influence your decision to become a writer later in life?
Yeah, well, I think the fact that, I did struggle with reading as a young person and had this, hearing loss that was discovered a bit later. My approach to the world was a little different. I was one who would often, and still do in many ways, be off in the corner watching because trying to take it all in. And so I think that really lends itself to writers, as we're trying to observe the world and then take it all in and then hopefully transfer that to the page. So that's a big part of it for me. Yeah, and I think my eventually becoming such a reader and being a teacher and trying to instill that in other kids and other children, that love of storytelling, of being, receive the stories by reading, by being told, and then being able to do that for others is really important to me as well.
So
Such an
elementary,
escape for me.
yeah. So I was gonna say, so elementary books are very different than what you write. So how did you kind of decide this is the genre that you wanted to kind of go for?
Yeah, I think just because I'm a reader, I grew up reading anything and everything when it finally clicked for me. And back when I was younger, there are so many great young person books, like middle grades, like second, third, fourth grade. But then all of a sudden, there was like a desert of what to read. It went all the way from, the Ramona Quimby books to like, okay, there's nothing for a 12, 13, 14-year-old to read. So I jumped to Stephen King and, the grabbing things off of my dad's shelf and bookshelf and the books that he read would read. And because I've always enjoyed mysteries and thrillers. And so I've always loved trying to figure out how to solve the crimes and, as a reader and the puzzle pieces, putting them together. And I wanted to do that too. And, I thought about, children's books. I still think about it. But I had a story to tell. My first book, The Way to Silence, the story just really came to me and I just really felt compelled to write it down. And that's really where it started. And but I love all kinds of genres. I love historical, contemporary, nonfiction. But I love that the solving the mystery, the puzzle pieces, putting those together.
And now when you write your books, so some of the authors that I've interviewed, they do like, they know the beginning, they know the end, and then they kind of fill in the pieces, and others kind of go throughout and they don't even know the ending when they start. What kind of writing style do you have in that sense?
Yeah. So the pantser or the plotter. So the plotter knows from beginning to end, and the pantser writes by the seat of their pants. I have historically been in the pantser corner. I have an idea for a story. I have the characters. I think I know where it's going to go. I just start writing. And I love writing that way, although I kind of write myself in a lot of corners that way. And so my revision process is quite extensive. And so over the years, I've tried to kind of find a happy medium there. And so I'd say most of my books up until the one coming out, Everyone Is Watching, is pretty much a by the seat of my pants. But the one I'm working on, my next one, I've really worked on outlining it and trying to, you know, have a very clear path for myself. And you know what? It doesn't matter, because the characters kind of take over and do their own thing anyway. So it's really been cool. An interesting process. Yes.
And then I think I also read that your hometown kind of served as a basis for some of your books. How did your personal experiences and observations kind of form the atmosphere and theme of your novels?
Yeah. So most of my books, actually, I guess all of them up until Everyone Is Watching, have taken place in the state of Iowa, where I grew up. And so definitely a Midwest feel to them. And I love books where the setting becomes a character in itself. I love being transported wherever it may be, big city, small city, different country. I love reading those kinds of books where it just, the setting envelops you. And I really try to do that as a writer as well. And one of my favorite writers is Willa Cather, who has written some classics. My Antonia is my favorite book, but she has a quote that something like, let the fiction rise from the ground beneath your feet. And that's really, you know, that made a lot of sense to me. It's like, I'll write about what I see outside my window, where when I'm driving along country roads. And so it really has come from there. And I love the state I live in. It's a beautiful state. Many think of it just as cornfields, very flat. And we do have some of that, but it also has the Mississippi River and Missouri River. It has valleys and it has bluffs, and it's really a beautiful, beautiful state.
And reflecting back on the books that I read of yours, it is so true, because you do think immediately of the setting, and that there is such a feeling of like, I don't know, like a lot of the books, the psychological books, that thriller books that I kind of read, it's, you think of maybe the characters that stick out the most, and not that the characters don't stick out, but I can't think of any where the setting actually sticks out, especially in The Overnight Guest. That one is very much... So I love that. I want to get into a couple of your books, and selfishly, I wanted to start off with This Is How I Lied, because like I said, I literally just finished it and it's still very fresh in my mind. So the premise of this revolves around kind of a cold case investigation in a small town. What drew you to explore the dynamics of the small community and the secrets in the novel?
Yeah. So, you know, I love writing about small towns, because everybody seemingly, and if you talk to people from small towns, they'll say the same thing. It feels like everybody knows everything about everybody else. They're related to each other. They grew up with each other since, you know, they were kindergarten. It feels like they know everyone very intimately. But as we always know, you never quite know what goes on behind closed doors. So that's really just really is a very rich landscape for writing a book. And so I knew I wanted to write in a small town, and I had been really fascinated by the true crime stories where a cold case exists, and then after years, even decades, one little piece of evidence that couldn't be tested years before now can. And so, and like familial DNA comes into play. And there's a great nonfiction book called I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara, which is honestly probably, besides In True Blood by Truman Capote, the scariest book I've ever read. And it's not graphic or anything. It's just scary in that there's somebody was out there stalking these communities. And it's just a really beautifully written account of the search for the Golden State Killer. Mm-hmm. And that really inspired me in this story as well.
Yeah, I read that one a while ago, and I totally agree. It was, I mean, like a like a fiction book, but you're like,
read
it's
like
real.
Fiction.
It's real. This is very scary to have. Mm-hmm. Another thing in the book, so the caves played a significant role in the setting and setting the atmosphere for the story. How did you kind of approach integrating the caves into the plot? What significance do they hold? I've never read a book that had, you know, a psychological book that really had caves as a main setting.
Yeah. So interestingly, the caves that were in the book are modeled after some caves that weren't far from where we used to live in Iowa, and the Maquoketa Caves. And it's this really kind of intricate, system of caves where it's like a different world. It's a different world. And they're dark, they're creepy, they're like, they have their own climate. And, you know, it was perfect for this story because we've got secrets that are hidden and, you know, don't know what's underneath the surface. And the caves do play this really important role in the story. And so, and I also got to go there and, you know, kind of play around and walk around and, you know, just look at it. I'd been there many times, but to go there in a writing mode as a writer to look at things a little more differently was a lot of fun to do as well.
And then I think I also read, was it this book that you interviewed a local sheriff, or was it for this one?
Well, for many of my books, I did almost all, because they all have kind of a crime theme to it. And for several of my books, it was, I was able to interview our local police chief, who's had kids the same age as ours. And he has been a huge resource through the years. He had been, and I could just call him up on a whim or send him an email and say, how would this happen? Would this work? And he might laugh at me and say, no. And I said, well, I need it to work. I need it, you know, for my story to go this way. And he was a wonderful resource. Sadly, unexpectedly, he passed away while I was writing my last book. And he'll be greatly missed. But yeah, I definitely have people on the line to help me out, because I'm obviously not an expert in those areas at all.
Yeah, I just kind of appreciated that little piece, because my husband is in the police world. And anytime, you know, I'm very much tell me all the fake stuff you want about finding the DNA under something silly. And he's always like, this is so unrealistic. This would never happen this way. So I really appreciate, and he probably really appreciates the asking of the way that things would really pan out, which is cool.
Yeah. I try. And then you always say any mistakes or liberties, you know, is the fiction writer in me. But I do try to get it right.
No, you did a great job. So the first book that I read by you was The Overnight Guest, and that really explores themes of isolation in a few different ways, but specifically during a snowstorm. How did you use the setting to kind of heighten the tension and develop the character's psychological struggles?
Yeah, so in The Overnight Guest, you know, we have really, there's three different perspectives, but really noticeably One present day that's set during a snowstorm, past set during the heat of summer, and then this third one that kind of it takes the gamut. It goes through all the seasons. But for the snowstorm, why it was so important, I think, because the story takes place in the same place. So different years, different seasons. And having the seasons be different really has to do with grounding the reader where we're at in time and place. And so the winter part of it and that isolation is so important because I needed the character of Wiley, who's off at an old farmhouse writing her next true crime book, and she needed to be completely isolated for the story to unfold the way it needed to be. And that's really hard to do in modern day. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, we've got cell phones, we've got, you know, neighbors, we've got everything. So I needed to isolate her as much as possible. So in the middle of a rural area in Iowa, middle of a snowstorm, you know, which, you know, realistically, we do lose power once in a while mm-hmm. when there is a bad storm or snowstorm. We lose cell service once in a while. I know whenever I go to visit my mom, I'm traveling in the rural areas and I go down a dip, I'll lose cell service. You know, you need to be able to have the characters be on their own. And that was really important for this story. So in that sense, the weather really made a big impact on that. And in the opposite, with the heat of summer, with the storyline from 20 years before, summertime, it's state fair weather, it's really hot. And I really wanted to get that kind of carefree feeling of summertime. And, you know, kids would run around and play and from dusk, you know, from dawn to dusk. And so, yeah, I think that the weather really had a big play.
And I remember, I don't want to give like too much away, but I remember reading the summer part, which was, you know, when people were exploring in the house after something happened and that heat while I was like reading the book, I felt like you knew exactly what they were feeling and smelling and like it all. It wouldn't have been the same if it was in the other side, in the snowstorm side of it, you know, of the kind of the effect. So I definitely, that definitely stuck with me after. I was like, oh my gosh, this is very intense. So Wiley, the main character, is a true crime writer. She's facing her own traumas while she's investigating, you know, mystery, while she's writing about the mysteries. What kind of inspired you to create a protagonist with such a complex background, and how did you approach portraying her inner conflict?
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about this. I do love to read nonfiction, and it seems like a lot of people in this day and age are kind of obsessed with true crime. And I read all the books, I listen to the podcasts, I watch the documentaries, and it is easy to forget that it's real people. It's not, it's not fiction. These are real victims and real families that are impacted. But I thought it would be really interesting to write a story from the point of view of a true crime author who has to get the facts right. She has to research and get the information and tell us a true story. And I've always admired writers who can do that. And so that was important to me. And I really wanted to do a book within a book. So we have the present day and the storm, and that's the fictional part. And then Wiley's book, which is still fiction, but supposed to be nonfiction, that she's writing as the story goes. And so I thought that would be a really interesting way to approach writing a book.
And the thing I loved was the different perspectives of the book. Was that hard to kind of create, or did you write them individually, or did you write them as a whole process?
Yeah, I love reading books with multiple perspectives, and most of my books are written in several perspectives. So that's something I really enjoy doing. It does the, can make it more complicated. It's not as straightforward as of a story. But I also think for me, it really adds a richness to the story. So I kind of think of it as a relay race where a character kind of passes the baton to the next character to mm-hmm. continue the story. But I approach each book a little bit differently in how I write it. But for The Overnight Guest, I started writing this in the spring and summer. And so I wrote the Josie sections, the 20 years before during the summer, because it was hot out mm-hmm. and it made, you know, I would go for walks and I would, you know, it gets really hot here in the Midwest and humid. And so that really lent itself. And I wrote as far as I could in the story. I didn't get all the way through, but I had a good start. And then the seasons changed and it got cold and I wrote the winter scenes as well. And I wrote as far as I could through that. And then I had to go back through and weave in, weave the story together. And as for the third perspective with the mother and daughter, I had first written that from the point of view of the mother in the basement. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't sit right. It didn't feel right. So it was about 2 weeks before the book was due to turn in. And I was talking to my editor and I'm like, okay, I need to do this differently. I want, you know, let's do the point of view of the little girl. And wow. So then I ended up rewriting, and her perspective is really looking out a window. Mm-hmm. That's her perspective of the world. And so that was, it took a while to get there, but it finally clicked and I was able to get it where I wanted it to go.
Yeah, I loved that aspect of it. That was my favorite part. And then again, how it all kind of came together. So let's get into your new book, Everyone is Watching. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I'm so excited. It's quite different, a different novel for me than what I've written in the past. It's still a thriller. So it's the story of five strangers who are invited to take part in a reality competition show. And so they are all flown to Northern California and wine country to take part. And when they get there, they come from all different walks of life. When they get to the location, very quickly, they realize that it's not quite what they thought they signed up for. It's a very isolated location. They have to give up their cell phones. They can't talk to anybody in the outside world. And the competition, the challenges are quite dangerous. And then they don't quite know who's behind the scenes. And the whole world is watching because it's all being live streamed across the world. So yeah, very different, but very fun, a fun book to write. It was a blast.
And is this one written in different perspectives as well?
Yes. Yeah, it is. So it's written from the perspective of several of the different competitors. It's written from one of the production assistants. And there's also some sections where they jump back and forth in time with some of the characters, as well as there's some sections called The Vault, where the competitors on the show are in a little room, you know, talking to the audience about what's going on. And so from all these different perspectives, we kind of are able to piece together what is actually going on.
And so how did you kind of approach crafting the different characters for this? Like, did you find you had any challenges in creating them?
Yeah, it was the characters really were the hardest part for me to land on. And I think I rewrote this book two or three times, you know, pretty much all the way through. And, you know, the characters' professions change, some of them, their personal lives change, some of their genders change. And so it really took me some time to get to know them. And I think that's common for writers. We get the words on the page, we get to know our characters, and just like real people, they evolve over time. And so I really did get to know them as I wrote and finally settled on the cast of characters that ultimately are on the page.
But, and it seems like they have a lot of secrets as well.
Everybody has a secret.
What kind of message do you hope the readers take away from the exploration of their secrets? And
I think for me, I mean, it was just really a fun book to write, but also maybe a little reflection on our society and social media and our obsession with pop culture a little bit and the dangers of that, mm-hmm. and how I think we can all fall into that rabbit hole of thinking that we know public figures, whether, you know, really famous or these accidental public figures who may be on a reality show, how we think we know them and how we kind of put our own judgments on who they are and who we think they are, and mm-hmm. how sometimes that's accurate, sometimes it's not, and how easy it is to be that, keyboard warrior, not really knowing there are real people on the other side.
Oh, I'm so excited to read it. And what's the date that it comes out? March?
It comes out March 26th.
All right. So thank you so much for answering so many questions. I will be sure to link everything and share everything out. And so that's going to bring us to the end of another episode of The Running Wine Mom. Thank you so much, Heather, for sharing all of your insights, inspirations, and behind-the-scenes stories with us today. From her thrilling release, Everyone Is Watching, to exploration of small-town secrets in This Is How I Lied and the chilling suspense of The Overnight Guest, Heather's novels offer readers an escape into worlds filled with mystery, intrigue, and unforgettable characters. We hope you've enjoyed today's discussion as much as we have. If you're craving more literary adventures, be sure to check out Heather's latest book and explore her extensive library of reads. Thank you so much, Heather.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, if you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing it. You can also follow me on Instagram at @TheRunningWineMom_. And Heather, where can listeners find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Heather@HeatherGoodencroft.com. You can find me at HeatherGoodencroft.com, my website. You can also find me on just about all the socials, Facebook, Instagram. I'm even dipping my toe into TikTok. So I love to hear from readers. Love to connect with them.
I love the book talks. That's where I get a lot of my, that and the Peloton book club. I feel like I get lots of my books from, and that's how I found out about you. Someone recommended The Overnight Guest, and I'm just so grateful to have been able to have this conversation with you.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, you are strong, you are capable, and you are all amazing. Until next time, keep running, keep sipping, and keep embracing the joy of motherhood. Cheers, and I will be back next Tuesday.